Welcome to this episode of Disrupt. I'm Tim Mullaney with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with John Rousseau, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. With an economics degree from Princeton and a Harvard MBA in his back pocket, John Rousseau has forged a varied career. He began as an investment banker at Morgan Stanley, then went into the world of private equity, and then onto leadership roles at medical technology and services giant Medtronic and pharma company Mylan before joining Kindred Healthcare in 2013. In the fall of 2016, he was tapped to be CEO of Louisville-based ResCare, which is one of the largest providers of home care services in the country, serving more than 60,000 people each day across 44 states. I chatted with him about his tenure as CEO at ResCare, which has already been quite dynamic. He launched a strategy to further diversify the company's service lines to position it for managed care, and he's overseeing the move to a new corporate headquarters building in Louisville. Shortly after we recorded this podcast, ResCare announced that it would be rebranding as BrightSpring Health Services. In making that announcement, Rousseau said, "We chose the name BrightSpring as it evokes and reflects optimism, compassion, innovative thinking, and approaches, and hope for the future." All right. Welcome to the podcast, John. Happy to have you here this afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Tim. Thanks for thinking of us. We're glad to be here.
Wonderful. So to start out with, I just want to hear a little bit about your career path and what led you to where you are today as the CEO of ResCare. So I believe you started in finance as an analyst with Morgan Stanley, and then I think you did a few years at a private equity firm. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you know, my career's been split into probably about two parts now, actually more on the latter, but between the finance and M&A side and then the corporate side. I started in New York doing M&A and then was in private equity after that for about 5 or 6 years, all total. About the first 10 years of my life was in that side. And then the last 12 or 13 years have been on the operating side. And it's been great to do both. And, you know, in addition to sort of studying economics and things like that in college, I was also pre-medical. So really always had an interest in the sciences and, you know, the side in society moving forward, how many solutions have to get figured out from a health perspective in our communities and wanting to do something that felt like you were connected to the greater good and really making an impact on a day-to-day basis. And that ultimately brought me over to the healthcare side, a combination of being really interested in the sciences and technology and then wanting to do some good stuff every day.
Got it. Great. That's interesting. So after your years in more on the finance side, I think that you ended up in Minneapolis working for Medtronic. Can you sort of talk about that particular moment in your career, I guess, making that shift?
Yeah, I was fortunate to work at, I've been really blessed to work at some great companies and with some great people. Medtronic was outstanding, the leading device player in the world, and was fortunate to be a part of that organization. Real high technology, manufacturing, R&D, sales and marketing driven organization with a great mission as well. And just really fascinating to be able to see the impact at that point within healthcare that solutions, whether they're services or whether they're devices, but the real deep impact that the right solutions at the right time for certain target patient populations can make and drastically changing outcomes and improving lives. So real mission organization. When we were at Medtronic, it was primarily all about trying to solve problems through technology and devices. But I did see there in several of our business units how important the surround sound services were to even devices. And so it opened my eyes at a pretty early juncture to the importance of the supporting services that even go around the device side of the world. And then obviously in the healthcare services side, how critical those are as a part of what you do every day. So you can't get away from great services in any business that you're in. And I saw that even connected to a high technology device company like Medtronic. But a great start into healthcare, and it just made me really excited and eager to contribute as meaningfully as I could in the healthcare field.
And what was your role at Medtronic? What were you doing specifically?
I had roles across operations. Marketing there is very sort of general management oriented, but roles across operations, marketing, strategy, and corporate business development. So it was really a logical way for me to help and join their organization from a strategic and a business development standpoint. Very interesting looking at a lot of earlier stage technologies. You know, in the private equity world, typically you look at companies that are more established. But at Medtronic and a lot of their business and corporate development teams, you look at very early stage technologies that it's been fun to see literally over 10 years later how some of the things we worked on have finally come to market in different neurological and other therapeutic areas. So very interesting to do some earlier stage, more typical venture capital, really early science type work from a business development standpoint, and then transitioned into the operating side. Primarily in the diabetes division there, where we helped really expand glucose monitoring and the adoption of insulin pumps as just being such a terrific therapy and building the awareness around that and making some technology innovations to see those markets really move forward over the time that we were there.
Great, that's interesting. We'll circle back. I have some more questions about technology, and I'm interested to get your take given that background. But just to stick with your sort of career path at the moment, I think the next phase of your career after the Medtronic years was making the move over to Kindred Healthcare in Louisville. So I guess, can you take us through that transition point and talk about what you were doing at Kindred?
Sure. You know, it's I don't know that any of these things are ever too well thought out in people's lives or careers, but, you know, just were always situations in my transitions where folks that I really liked and respected ultimately, yeah, somehow we came in touch and sort of reached out, and you're able to see an opportunity where you think you can make an even bigger impact and continue to build on the things that you've been doing to date. So I actually spent a couple of years in between Medtronic and Kindred. I went to one of the bigger pharma companies by volume, Mylan, a huge company from a both generic and branded pharmaceuticals perspective. And that was very interesting because they were really pushing very hard on the commercial side of their organization in about 150 countries across over 1,000 SKUs and 20 therapeutic areas, you know, all across different sort of devices, pharma, diagnostic products, drug device combinations, really, really interesting company. So they've done a lot of acquisitions globally, and it was just really fun to be a part of that global team as they press forward, really building out a lot of their commercial capabilities. We were able to do a lot of things. Pharma tends to invest much more heavily in sales and marketing. And so it was really neat to be in an organization where literally you had hundreds of millions of dollars every year going into sales and marketing. And so it was really fun to be in those worlds and helping to contribute as I could as they were pressing forward across a lot of different branded and generics products. Another organization that was incredibly well respected from a quality perspective. And so, you know, I've been fortunate wherever I've been, that quality is really at the front and center. And that stuck with me everywhere. You know, if there's a common theme I've always seen, it's that if you deliver quality products and services, everything else sort of takes care of itself, including the financial side. So I did do several years there and, you know, was put in touch with Kindred, who's really one of the biggest employers in healthcare at the time across LTACs and SNFs, and then they'd made big investments in the prior 5 years on the rehab side and in home health and hospice. And they were looking to continue to do that from a care management capacity, and was really honored to go over there and help lead that organization on the care management being home health hospice side. We actually started building out physician services as well in different care transitions programs and communities. And then from there, ultimately transitioned to lead the rehab business, which was the biggest rehab business in the U.S. from a site to service perspective, and a tremendous organization, and really getting to see firsthand on the services side there that the value you can drive in the community where you need to see firsthand what is going on with patients and, you know, when they discharge from an acute setting, how big of a difference the right decisions make at that time and the right care makes to make sure people don't go back into the hospital. So that was my time at Kindred prior to coming to where I am today.
Right. So I'm curious, just hearing your story, I think for some people it seems pretty logical that, you know, they start out in finance and then they go on to become, you know, a CFO and then they become a CEO and then you can kind of connect the dots. But it's a little bit harder for me to connect the dots in sort of your career path. And I'm wondering if you can, I'm not sure exactly what my question is maybe, but wondering if there's a sort of skill set that you think connects all of the different roles you've had or all these different types of organizations. Or another thing I'm thinking is that maybe you've progressed closer and closer to having a more direct impact on sort of patient lives. Is that something that you found over the course of your career that you were really drawn to, wanting to be hands-on in the operations and be close to the patient in that way?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I mean, wherever I've been, it's just been with organizations that you feel like you can make the biggest impact at. You know, who has the broadest reach, who can drive the most influence, and who can bring the most resources to bear, hopefully in a really productive way. So, you know, for me, it was always important to have both the business side and the operational side. And I guess that's sort of the way I always think about things. You know, like in life, you can't just do one or two things well. An organization has to do many things well. You have to be very administratively sound on the back office operational side, on the finance side. But then you also have to deliver just a terrific product and service on the front end side. And so for me, I've tried to gain as many of those skills as I could over time and balance those two sides of any organization. And, you know, for me, I've always had more depth on the finance, on the M&A side, and then on the sales and marketing and product management side. So coming into the services world, I really endeavored to go as deep as I could on the quality side, trying to always know exactly what was going on from a hand-to-hand perspective in the field with patients, with clients, and really prioritizing, my involvement in things like quality and compliance as much as I could, to make sure that that's always in order. So I think anybody in any role is always deeper in a few areas. And for me, I've just always seen the value of trying to make sure that you do know what you're talking about in as many areas as you can. And then from there, you know, you really need to rely on experts in all of those functional positions and all of those field-based leadership positions to really be driving, the right level of accountability and results every day to deliver a great product. But at the end of the day, you're ultimately responsible and you need to be able to have a pretty good working knowledge of every department within the company and then relying on your partners and experts to execute every day. But for me, I've just always been personally interested in knowing about things that I don't know a lot about. So I've always intrigued to learn as much as I can. And I think that's probably why ultimately I've gravitated to more general management type roles.
Got it. So I think it was in 2016 that at the time you were executive vice president and running the rehab services at Kindred. And that's when the ResCare opportunity came up. Wondering why the position at ResCare appealed to you and if you can speak to what you think made you a good fit for this position and ResCare as a company.
Yeah, I think there's just a tremendous demand and need in the industries that we work within, whether it's for seniors, whether it's for folks with significant rehab needs, or whether it's for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. There is just a tremendous need in growth rate in society to be able to take care of folks in the highest quality, most cost-effective way possible. ResCare has been around for over 44 years. It has a tremendous sense of mission internally. And I viewed a lot of different avenues that we could take the company, whether it was deepening in the markets that we're in today, or whether it was doing some really logical expansions into adjacent markets. I just ultimately thought we are playing in markets that collectively are $150 billion and larger, all growing at attractive growth rates. And by and large, still industries that need to evolve to be able to do things more efficiently. And that was a task sort of sitting out there that seemed very appealing on many levels. It just seemed like a terrific opportunity. If you have the right people, if you have the right technology systems, and you create the right culture in the organization, where you create a learning environment every day, where people just want to do better every day, where people feel connected to the mission between our markets and the different opportunities within our markets and nearby markets. It seemed like if we could truly put together the right group of people across the organization driving to the right set of aligned goals, it seemed like something that we could have a lot of fun doing, while not easy. And that's been the case. I think we've made a ton of progress, but at the same time, the world of healthcare, as most people can attest to, is, changes readily and, isn't the most easy of industries to always operate in. So, we're just trying to remain as focused as we can every day on the top 5 or 10 things that matter to the organization the most and try to get a little bit better every month. So, but just ultimately a lot of opportunities within the markets we operate in and a lot of room for innovation if we make the right decisions.
And ResCare is already a pretty diverse company in terms of its service lines. I think obviously everyone I think knows about the large in-home Medicaid personal care business. And then there's the neuro rehabilitation specialty. You do workforce services, pharmacy, behavioral health. I think that list goes on from there. But I think we've talked in the past about a priority you have for extending more into medical home care and hospice. And just wondering if you can speak to that goal and why you think that's important.
Yeah, the thread that ties the whole company together is that we are taking care of very high need, complex populations in home and community settings. So, our vision that we talk about here every day is to be the leading provider of comprehensive home and community-based health services to complex populations, really to improve outcomes across all stages of life. And so whether that is a senior who's in need of assistance in their home or a community setting, whether that's somebody with an intellectual or developmental disability who needs home care as well, whether that's somebody with a very real rehabilitation need, all of those folks are complex by nature. They're very high need. They're front-of-the-line populations. And that's who we serve in slightly different home and community settings, depending. And so there really is a common thread that ties our whole organization together. And I think another helpful way to think about it that we think about it is, so not only do we focus on those complex populations, whoever they are and wherever they may be, we're trying to develop real excellence and best practice in a handful of capabilities that are required to serve any of those populations and to run a big organization that serves those populations. So, for example, government relations. Before in other parts of healthcare, you're primarily dealing with Medicare and commercial payers. We do that here as well, but a huge part of our payer source and who we deal with is Medicaid and state Medicaid. So you need to have a really good government relations team, and you really need to advocate for your populations using data and showing the value proposition as best as you can. How do you help manage all the employees across all those businesses? You have some employees that are higher up on the labor ladder, if you will, and more clinical. And then you have folks who are every bit just as important on the front lines who are a little bit lesser skilled in terms of the clinical capability set. But what are you doing in the organization to manage your culture and to manage all of your employees, to make sure they're trained, to make sure they have the right systems to work in? And then you look at your technology. What are you doing from an electronic health record, electronic medical record, or an ERP, enterprise resource platform? What are you doing from a technology perspective in terms of the systems that your folks are operating in every day? And how are you using data and acting on that data across the organization? So we think about the organization as one that focuses on these complex populations in home and community settings, whoever they are, and then what are the things that we need to do really well internally to support our employees who are serving those populations throughout the country from a labor perspective, from a technology perspective, and from a government relations and advocacy perspective. If we're doing those really well, they can underpin all of the different service lines that we have. So that's how we think about the organization broadly. When it comes to what are we focusing on the future, really our core populations that we're serving today are those seniors, folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and folks with serious rehab needs. Not only going deeper there, really our goal is twofold strategically. Number one, it's to operate in serving those various populations. It's to operate with the best possible model that we can in those industries. So how are we driving our service every day in terms of what are our employees doing? How are we scheduling? How are we delivering services? What's our quality? What's our documentation? How do we bill all that? Creating the best operating model we can in all of those businesses today. And then ultimately, though, layering on more of a clinical element to those populations. So there's a lot of folks out there that we serve that are some of the last frontiers, if you will, in terms of really effective and more focused care management from a clinical perspective. So we believe there to be not only a tremendous value and further value in servicing all those populations from a day-to-day perspective, but then ultimately upping the ante in terms of the clinical capabilities and helping to provide more and more care management solutions. So we offer a tremendous value proposition today, but if we continue to offer more clinical services, improve the quality from a health perspective and not just a day-to-day living perspective, all of that's going to lower costs in the future. So there's going deeper in areas that we have today, like our rehab platform, our outpatient rehab platform. We have a pharmacy services and a behavioral services platform that provides the behavioral supports and pharmaceutical needs for most all of our populations. And then there's looking at things that are adjacent to home care, like hospice and like home health. All of those are really nice continuums when you look at how patients travel across some of those service lines in the community as their needs change. And so we're trying to deepen where we have real interest today, but then we're also trying to sort of step next door in really logical adjacencies where we think there's a real strategic fit from a service delivery perspective that looks more clinical by nature. And that's how we're driving the organization. And ultimately, we think by doing that, we'll be able to deliver surround sound solutions for partners down the road.
Great. So I think hospice and home health care clearly can see how that are sort of complementary services as you're building out that continuum. Wondering if there are any maybe less, I don't want to use the word obvious, but additional kinds of capabilities. I'm thinking of home-based primary care specifically, because I think we've seen some startups enter the space that are trying to find ways of offering this. We've seen the growth of some hospital at home type programs, bringing sort of high acuity care into the home. And I think you've mentioned in the past that you're sort of interested in what a home-based primary care layer could do in terms of sort of, I think, care management and sort of overseeing this robust continuum that you're building. So is that true? Is that something you're interested in as well, home-based primary care?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in getting as local and in the home as you can to drive really materially different health outcomes. You just have to be in a home to see what somebody's experiencing every day, to see what the risks are, to see what's in the refrigerator, to see how they're moving around in their home from hour to hour. You just have to be able to have insights into what's going on when somebody's not in a doctor office or a hospital to really know what you need to do to help them. And so that's a big focus for us. I would say we're in the earlier side of layering on those capability set and building those out. But for the populations that we serve, our goal is to be able to serve them clinically in a 24/7 kind of way. And we're thinking through how to do that through a combination of primary sort of caregiving services, EMS, emergency medical support response sort of services, and then telemonitoring services. So I sort of get back to technology. That's a driver throughout our organization, and it's something that will support that as well. I hark back to one of your questions earlier around why this company was attractive. I believe some of the industries we're in, they still need to catch up and evolve compared to some other industries. So we believe if we can do the right things from a technology perspective, and we're making a massive commitment and investment on this side of our business, but we really believe if we can transform the company, and we're probably about in the third or fourth inning of doing that right now, but we really believe if we can transform our company through technology, that it positions us to not only operate the model as effectively as we can in a world where you're expected to be efficient and deliver high quality, but also to be able to provide us with the capabilities to deliver these care management solutions down the road, to partner with payers, to partner with states, or even be the payer ourselves. And that's what we're working towards. So, you know, for example, when we talk about technology, what does that look like? You know, for us, it looks like five or six things principally. We're looking at everything that we're doing in the organization from an infrastructure standpoint. So literally, what is the hardware, software, telephony, et cetera, that travels across all of your offices and homes? What are we doing, number two, from an EMR, EHR, and enterprise platform perspective with our systems to make our employees as efficient as we can and to make sure that we have all of the data that we need at our fingertips to provide the best care in the home and to make sure that we have all the required documentation all the time. You know, third, what do you do with that data? The business, the BI and the analytics, how do we use that data throughout our organization? And then I mentioned it before, telemonitoring and telehealth. There's about four or five different use cases for telemonitoring and telehealth in our company, depending on if you're in one of our IDD homes or depending on if you're in one of our senior homes delivering home care. There's about four or five like very tangible use cases for how we would deploy solutions like that for our staff and for delivering quality and safety. And then sort of last, from a website and an employee communications applications app perspective, we're pushing really hard on, we're going to be launching all new websites across the company here in the next year. And even recently, we've rolled out a new employee communications app. So, you know, we have about 40,000, you know, staff out there around the country. Not all of them are on email all day long, and people live on their phones and apps these days. And so, you know, we have this really cool outreach app that we've started rolling out so that any point in time, you know, I can communicate, anybody can communicate to an employee wherever they are. They can do things like check their PTO. They can do things like check their pay stub. We're going to be launching something called Daily Pay here shortly, where people will be able to take their pay every day if they want it and get paid every day and get a paycheck every day if they want it. So those are all the things from a technology perspective that we're trying to do to not only drive a difference for our employees and our frontline caregivers, but then to also think about in the future, how do we have the data that's going to enable us to look at populations, to tell us where we need to pay particular attention, and then have some of the technology that supports people who might be going in the home proactively to drive a better clinical and quality outcome.
Great. I want to drill down maybe specifically into some of what you said about telehealth and remote monitoring. I think we've seen some action from CMS very recently in the last week or two. And the physician payment rule for next year that they're proposing to start paying for more telehealth solutions and services, at least on the physician side. So wondering if you're heartened by these recent developments and think that this is just going to continue and make telehealth even more viable. And then I think you mentioned that there are a couple of different specific use cases in which you would deploy these kinds of technologies in a senior home care situation. Wondering if you can maybe provide an example of what one of those might be.
Yeah, I think just certainly as you're seeing, the trend will continue. I think things like remote caregiving, whether it's through the camera and telemonitoring, or whether it's through actual sensors in the home that alert you to things, I think that trend is obviously only going to continue. You're seeing an explosion of it over the last 5 or 10 years. And CMS is, I think, continuing to move forward with it. I think CIMA up at CMS has been a huge proponent of it. We're huge fans of hers. And I think it's very smart. I mean, it addresses a lot of challenges out there. You know, literally one of the challenges in healthcare today is just labor availability, right? Like, you know, so if a nurse can make the rounds virtually to 20 homes over the course of the day instead of 3 or 4 homes, that's a very logical and interesting thing to do. Now, you're always going to have to be in there physically hand to hand at some frequency and as certain things occur, no question. But we really believe that the right technology that would supplement one-on-one visits and interactions is just a terrific thing from an oversight and a quality perspective. And it will be something that makes the employee and the staffing and the labor challenge really across many industries in the United States it's something that can help solve that. So we're huge supporters of that. You know, from a use case perspective, you know, there's things just like for us, we have a little bit of a unique situation that's different from other parts of healthcare. You know, for folks in our intellectual and developmental disabilities business, a lot of those people are out in homes and communities. And so how do you connect with those staff and those communities? We always have people going into those homes, but literally something as simple as being able to check in with people. They press a button and they can talk to somebody when they have a question. Things like that go a really long way. So just connectivity with your employees and your labor force is a big one. The second one really is just sort of all about safety and compliance and just making sure that if and when anything ever happens, you're there to respond to it as quickly as you can. I think from a labor perspective as well, you know, there's many situations where you might not need somebody there all the time. You know, frankly, a lot of patients and clients don't want you there all the time. And so if you have the right level of monitoring services with on-call or the appropriate supporting one-on-one live interactions, it can be something that actually reduces the need for labor in many ways. And again, healthcare is no different from look at any convenience store or Walmart or Domino's Pizza, where there's help wanted signs in many locations. I guarantee you all those other companies are thinking about ways to figure out how to serve their customer bases as efficiently as they can, given some of the staffing challenges in the U.S. these days. And so, you know, from a labor perspective, there are real solutions there that could solve 30-40% of what some companies face in terms of their needs today. And of course, last, actually the provision of healthcare through the right technology, again, always supported by the live interaction when needed and when required, but check-in services and other healthcare delivery services, care coordination work that can be done through the phone or through cameras and the right technology, sensors that alert you to things. And, you know, predictive analytics is just going to continue to become more and more prevalent, whether it's predictive analytics that can look at a population and tell you these are the folks most likely to have an issue with XYZ based on things that we're seeing, based on the data that has been entered and collected. Those are really important. But I mean, there's really cool technologies out there, even that they can look at they can observe how somebody is walking and standing and almost start to predict like fall risk and things like that. So sensors in the home supplemented by telehealth technology are also, I think, going to be really interesting. So, you know, a lot of really fun use cases to think about for the future that most importantly solve very real sort of client patient coverage and quality considerations and improve both of those areas.
Great. So I want to change tack a little bit here, maybe, although this is, I think, related to what we've just been talking about, and put this in sort of an M&A lens. Because we've seen a lot of interesting and some really big deals lately in the industry, including your former company, Kindred, now being owned by Humana and two private equity firms. And you mentioned earlier that maybe the ultimate goal down the road is that a company like ResCare could even maybe become the payer. So I'm wondering if you really see this as the future of the industry, whether it's a combination of a provider, a large provider like a Kindred or a ResCare with a payer like a Humana, or, you know, if ResCare starts its own insurance plan, or just do you see that combination of payment and care provision really coming together in the future?
Yeah, I guess, and maybe I'll touch on sort of two areas real quick when it comes to consolidations or acquisitions. You know, just one in terms of where the industry is today. Obviously, these are incredibly fragmented industries. You know, about 15, 20,000 participants in a lot of these different industries. And so I think you will just have to continue to see more and more consolidation. From a technology perspective, there are going to be technology requirements that companies are going to have in the future, or you just won't be able to work with certain payers. And so from a technology perspective and making those investments, and then also from a scale perspective and being as efficient as you can be, you know, to leverage the amount of sort of corporate overhead, administrative expenses for those two reasons. And then a third reason, which is just practically being able to partner with states and payers and other sources, Very difficult for payers to go partner with 700 providers versus, say, one provider in a certain geography. So for those reasons, we really continue to see the value and the rationale for continued consolidation within these industries. And I would be very surprised if 5 to 10 years from now, that pace hasn't accelerated even more. And so that's sort of how we think about the world as it is today. Here at our company, we've done 11 acquisitions in the last 6 months. We'll probably do 15 or 16 by the end of the year. And, you know, that's a combination of playing off some of those needs in the industry to consolidate for those three reasons that I mentioned before. And it's really deepening in some very important strategic areas for us that have been typically more clinically related, whether it's been pediatric autism, whether it's been outpatient rehab, whether it's been hospice, whether it's been home care or pharmacy. Those are the areas that we are pressing on pretty hard right now for very strategic reasons. I think secondly, when it comes to acquisitions, yeah, I mean, the Humana Kindred transaction partnership made a lot of sense to me. And I think it makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. They had a great geographic overlap. And, you know, you can really see the industrial logic of it. And you can see the population management logic of it, too. So would not surprise, I think, me and a lot of folks I talk to see some more of that happening. I don't know if more of that happens 1 year from now or if more of that happens 5 years from now. But certainly there is going to probably be some continued trend towards payer provider partnerships and in organizations. As we just think about the populations that we serve, and we can see every day what the opportunity is from a healthcare perspective, and how do you just ultimately coordinate all of the players in the healthcare system and in that sort of supply chain, if you will, there's just a lot of potential benefit if all of the interests could be aligned. And so, you know, as we try to build up our care management capabilities, you know, we're out there on the front lines every day today, whether it's doing the non-medical stuff, which has a huge value. I mean, more than 50% of the reason why people go back to the hospital is for non-medical reasons. And so there's a tremendous value there. I think what Medicare said about starting to cover the benefit of home care for home care services, I think that really speaks to how much people are appreciating the non-medical model of care as well. But it's really optimized when that's in close partnership with the medical model of care. And then if you have the right incentives and you're working with your payer source and for all the right reasons and all the right ways, you know, that's ultimately when you realize the best outcome for everybody. So whether that's through just being a great high quality provider today that's very technology enabled and provides all the data that payer sources need to make the most informed decisions, whether it's that or whether it's taking the next step to start to have some strategic partnerships with payers in a preferred provider kind of way, or whether it's ultimately something more significant and formal than that, you know, all of those make sense to us. Hard to say, obviously, when things like that could occur, but certainly continuing to align interests in healthcare for the benefit of the patient and to coordinate the delivery of services is something that is just going to continue to make sense for, I think, some pretty obvious reasons.
Right. And you mentioned that Medicare Advantage shift to allow non-skilled in-home care as a benefit starting next year. And it sounds like you see this as an opportunity. Wondering if you have already heard anything from the MA plans, if you're in talks with them. I think there's been some debate about how quickly and how comprehensively the plans are actually going to be able to offer some sort of benefit around that kind of care.
Yeah, I think your last point is still the question. We're lucky to have good payer relationships. We've talked to numerous, we provide services for many of the different payers out there. I think everybody is sort of, you know, interested to see how they adopt that benefit, over what period of time. But more than anything, payers, rightly so, are very focused on trying to find populations where there's a real opportunity to improve outcomes and lower costs through better care delivery and care management and care coordination. And so, you know, we are in regular discussions with them about how do we go to the next stage. you know, from a partnership perspective. So I think more than anything, as I mentioned, what CMS said there was really appreciating the value and the benefit of holistic care for clients and patients in home and community settings, right? So if you go in there, literally companionship, it is very important. Diet, what is going on from a diet nutrition standpoint? What is going on in terms of people's mobility and just moving around and walking around every day? Are they taking their medications appropriately? Are there fall hazards in the home? How do we address those? You know, those five things that I even walked through right there are very material to the outcome of somebody's condition, health condition, and how frequently they do or don't go to the hospital once they start to get to the point where they have a lot of chronic conditions. And so I think it shows a real appreciation for the value of the non-medical model, and in making that model as sophisticated as possible, as technology enabled as possible, and pairing that with the right clinical capabilities to deliver at the right time and things like telemonitoring. That's sort of the world where all of the pieces of the puzzle come together with the patient at the center. And that's what we're pursuing pretty aggressively and making a lot of traction with. But I think it's a real validation of the value of the services that the home care industry provides.
Great. I guess as we're wrapping up here, I do want to ask a question about, I guess, financing, since you have such a strong background in that. And I think such a big proportion of the revenue for ResCare is through Medicaid, which is not known for being necessarily the most generous payer. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of investment in technology, making a lot of acquisitions. So how are you sort of approaching financing these days? I assume you must be very diligent in managing things on the cost side. But do you feel like access to capital is healthy and where you want it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think your last point there, we're hyper-focused on trying to be as diligent with the resources that we have as possible. We've done things like create a PMO, a project management team organization, that all they do every day is hunt around our organization to make sure that we're as efficient as possible. You know, just sort of off the cuff, I mean, we've delivered about $40 million of efficiencies even over the last 12 months just by doing things as smartly as we can. It has nothing to do with people reductions. Our headcount is up. We've hired over 150 people at significant manager positions and above in the organization over the last 15 months. It's all about can we procure that more efficiently? Can we do that more smartly, more effectively at a lower cost? So we're hyper-focused on trying to be as efficient as we can. We really want to be a continuous improvement organization. We really want to be a learning organization. That's sort of a mantra around here. How do we help people live their best life, and how do we learn and get better every day? So we're really focused on that. You know, when it comes to advocating, you know, we really try to advocate as much as possible for our employees and for their wage rates. We've delivered over $50 million of increases in frontline employee pay over the last year. I mean, that is a huge number. And part of how we've been doing it's the right thing to do. And part of how we've been doing that is driving things like the PMO savings like I did before. But the demand for these services is growing at healthy rates. And we're investing in the business because we want to be the provider of choice out there. And all of our markets are growing at somewhere between 3, 4, 6, 7, or 8%. And so you have to provide the right solutions to these folks. You know, what's really important, I think, to remember and about our services is that they have an incredible value proposition. I mean, serving folks in home and community settings versus institutionalized settings and versus having people go in and out of the hospital saves an incredible amount of money for society, for the healthcare systems, for states, for the federal government. And I think people really appreciate that. The people that we serve, these are front of the line populations. These are must serve populations that don't have alternatives. I mean, this is who Medicaid was set up to take care of: kids, single mothers, folks with disabilities, older folks in our society. This is who these entitlement programs in our country, you know, 50, 100 years ago were set up to take care of. And so, you know, these are front of the line populations that are really growing. And so our responsibility here is to be as efficient as we can, to deploy the right technology solutions as best we can, and to try to merge the non-medical and the medical models as best we can to provide the right level of care. You know, Medicaid is actually about 60% of who we are today. It actually ticks down a little bit more every year as we go deeper and deeper into some of the pharmacy, rehab, and other clinical areas. So one of the things we really like about our organization, and one of the things that I think, at least personally, everybody has their own opinion, but one of the things that I personally think is really important in healthcare today is to be pretty diversified. And so we are a very diversified organization from a geography, from a service line, from a payer perspective, but at the same time wrapped around a thesis that is very clear in terms of the complex populations that we're serving in these home and community settings, and what capabilities do we need to have across those service lines to be able to have a very coherent, well-functioning organization. And that's how we ultimately think about it.
Great. Just briefly, I want to check in on the move to a new corporate headquarters that I think is ongoing, and which I think is also meant to help save on costs and drive efficiencies. Where are you sort of in the process of making that move?
Right. Yeah, we're getting close. We are getting close. You know, as some people could probably imagine, moving a building, moving a corporate headquarters, actually takes a lot of work. So there's some folks around here have done a phenomenal job with a lot of their time over the last year to help make this happen. But we'll be moving hopefully in October. So it's right around the corner, just a couple months away. And you know, our lease was coming up, so we had to make a decision. And in the process of thinking through that, ultimately we decided to on the property that we're going to be in. But you know, it's fantastic. It's going to be all about having people work in a very employee-friendly environment. You know, folks will be close to each other. You'll be able to see from one side of the building to the other side of the building. You know, light will stream through the whole building. We're going from 6 floors down to 2 floors because the floor plate is bigger, so more people can be next to each other. You know, a very sort of modern workplace feel, a lot of light colors. You know, we've really done a lot from, we've really tried to focus on culture and driving our mission as much as possible. We talk about legacy a lot. Legacy is an acronym here for leadership, have a great environment, you know, get going, have a great attitude, be a great communicator, create a great communicative environment. And then why, you know, you yourself be an example. And so I think, you know, one of the things we've tried to do, we are trying to link our hiring, our performance reviews, and our pay all to our legacy standards. And we're really trying to drive that throughout the organization. So it's going to be a great step for us to have our physical environment around us, I think, really be conducive to what we're trying to do from a culture and a legacy perspective internally, in terms of how we're just trying to drive energy and excitement and enthusiasm throughout the organization. So that's right around the corner. And, you know, I would guess here coming up in the late fall, you know, maybe you can visit us in our new building.
I will definitely take you up on that. That sounds great. I'd love to see it. So the last question I'd like to ask in these discussions is around the concept of disruption, because we call the podcast Disrupt. So just curious about how you think of business disruption and whether you see ResCare at all as a disruptor, even though it's a company that, you know, I think usually we think of disruptors as startups, new entrants, and ResCare has been around for 45 years almost. So just curious how you think about disruption.
Yeah, I think like any industry, healthcare is going to continue to change. And I think the areas you're likely to see that change that we're positioning for is around, you know, just continued step forwards in technology. Again, I think some of our industries are still a little bit still catching up. And so we not only want to be a leader there, but we feel like we have a responsibility in our industries to be a technology leader. And we see a future where whoever has the technology solutions that support their workforce is best possible, and whoever has technology that supports quality is best possible is somebody that's going to succeed. So I think continuing to have a really sharp eye on technology is obviously critically important. Care integration is just going to be another area that I think that continues to accelerate moving forward for us. You know, our strategies where we're deepening the focus of some of our acquisitions, trying to bring together non-medical and medical models of care, ultimately as well layering on care management, telemonitoring to our capability set. But that number two, that area of care integration, I think is going to continue to be very, very important. Predictive analytics as well is going to be critical to how you ultimately best manage patients and know where to focus. And then really last, partnerships. Continued partnerships with the right other stakeholders in the industry, I think you'll continue to see more and more of. And so, how do you position your organization from a quality and a data and a technology perspective to have effective partnerships with the right stakeholders throughout healthcare? Those would be the three areas that I think, at least for us, we're going to be continue to be focused on. To that end, we've even created a new quote unquote innovation center here, which really drives our strategy to support new service models, workflows, and technologies, to not only be a preferred platform for client patient management solutions today, but also for new models of care and payment with states and payers up tomorrow. So we've actually gone so far as to create a center around that here internally.
Great. Well, it was great to talk to you, and thanks again for joining us.
All right. Thanks very much, Tim. Have a great day.